Chudzinski.
Yeah. Chud did not make it very long.
He certainly didn't. And there was a press conference about it.
Dan DeRose with 19 Extras. I'm not a sports guy. I'm a news guy, so new to all this. So I'm in here as a voice to the fans to ask their questions. Small sampling from our Facebook page, as you can imagine. News last night. Real quick, this team remains an embarrassment, not only to the NFL, but the fans as well. We deserve better. Who really cares anymore? They have lost their fans trying to outsmart the rest of the league, and frankly, they've encouraged apathy instead of hope. And lastly, totally done with anything Browns. Haslam and his, these are their words, Haslam and his stooges, Banner and Lombardi, can pack up and get out of Cleveland.
Yeah.
Jimmy, can you assure the fans, their words, not mine, that you don't have the three stooges running this operation?
Yeah, listen, I feel really confident we have the right people to take this organization where we need to, okay? And I think what the fans need to understand is, and you all have heard me say on numerous occasions since we've been here about a year and a half now, we have the best fans in the world, okay? And I've said our fans deserve better. And what I want our fans to hear is nobody cares about winning and is going to work any harder to get us there than the people you're looking at right now, particularly the owner, okay? We take this extremely seriously, and I purposely said what I said earlier. It galls me when you all write, and you have the right to do it, and people have the right to say it, same old Browns. It's our single mission to change that.
To the Browns that we're now set back yet another year, and here we are again. An apology that you made the wrong choice with the wrong guy.
You know, listen, we could get into that all you want. I think the key message needs to be we're going to work hard to get this right, okay? We're going to work hard to get this right, and we're going to do everything we can to get it right.
I just want to add, as unpopular and undesirable for us to be sitting here right now and acknowledging that we didn't get it right, I think the fact that we're making this change makes a statement that we're not going to accept not being really successful. And I think that whether you agree with the decision or not, that that's an important message for our fans to hear. It may be one of the things that we feel will make a difference as we go forward. We're going to demand of everybody, including especially and starting with ourselves, that we be successful, and if we're not, we're going to
do what we need to get there.
Yeah, I'll say one other thing. These are expensive moves, okay?
While the Browns just keep stumbling through another bunch of bad personnel moves and mismanaged games and injuries and losses, you know, and then now firing.
Yeah, I mean, living in Cleveland, you hear about this all the time, and you know, people get really, you know, into their Browns. And I think we were out having tacos one night, and we were watching a game, and the Browns had a good lead, and there was, I don't know, maybe 30 seconds left. I think they were playing.
It was the game against the Patriots recently, the Patriots came back and then to get close, and then made an onside kick.
And they won.
Yeah.
You know, and they beat them. And then all the sort of chatter about, you know, the game was, you know, don't celebrate until it's over. Like, you know, as a Browns fan, you got to wait until the last second ticks off before you can celebrate your win. And we were at the bar and people were excited and hey, and this is kind of great. And then it just, you could see it was going downhill faster and faster. And as soon as that happened, people just got out of the bar. They just paid their tabs and left.
Yeah, it was a taco bar out in Madison in Lakewood, right? Barrio?
Yes.
Yeah, that place is pretty good.
I recommend the queso dip.
Yeah, you get the queso dip and the salsa with the chips, and then you get a couple tacos, and that's plenty. It's a good place. There's a song. This, okay, so this is just something that people have been watching on YouTube.
Wow, 312 million views.
Yeah. I think that's the actual version of it, but I'm not even sure. But okay, so that's you know, that has a lot of views online. Yeah, exactly. And you know, opinions about it vary. Looks like the top comment's pretty critical. But all right, so we were at a Christmas Eve party, and we were out in Seattle. And there's a lady that gave us some jam.
Yeah.
And she said that she liked, like, one of the takeoffs on What Does the Fox Say?
Really?
It almost seems like this is kind of thing is its own take. It's own, I don't want to say its own parody, maybe, but do you know? It's like, this the Fox thing kind of seems like its own kind of take on itself. But no, there's stuff out there, including What Does the Donkey Say?
I have never heard of this What Does the Fox Say, so I'm highly fascinated by it. But I do know that when I worked at GamePro, I shared an office with this guy.
Uh-huh.
And everybody got like a personality, and mine was the Vixen and this guy's was Fennec Fox. But by that time, I used to be a female character, like kind of like a Matrix-looking woman. But then there was another character. We looked very similar, so they turned me into a fox. So I was a fox, but I had on this, like, cool outfit. And I was more like a club dancer. Like, I had a little black skirt and go-go boots and a little tank top with a big V on it. And I was really cute, and I had this big fluffy tail. Well, this guy, who was Fennec Fox, like, was so, he thought I was so into foxes, and he was just like, wow, this is so cool. Come to find out that foxes in the whole, like, when you dress up in the costumes, like cosplay, like a lot of people are foxes. You get it, I'm a fox, ha ha ha. And a fennec fox is like this kind of, like, white, usually kind of a white fox, bigger ears, kind of looks like a, I don't know, doesn't look like a dog, really. Looks like kind of another animal, but it looks very foxy. And I had no idea that foxes were so popular in that way. So I think maybe...
No, I did not.
You know, this... What does the fox say? I mean, I think there's, like, some kind of culture around foxes, you know? Like, there's, like, probably, like, a whole subculture around foxes.
Oh, so there's an, you know? There's a reference to that that's part
maybe.
Of what's going on.
Like I said, I've never seen this before. I feel kind of, like, under a rock here.
Well, I don't think everybody's heard of it, but it was just one of those things that people were passing around on the internet for like a few days, and obviously it kept going for a while. So now
gave us the jam though.
Yeah.
She is probably what in her late 60s, and she lives in a town of 7 people, and she's heard of it. That's why I feel like I've lived under a rock.
Well, I mean, you know, she's probably on the internet. All right. So this is a cover of it. You know, take off on it, and here it is.
Hee-haw, hee-haw, hee-haw.
Oh my god, this goes on.
Donkey say. Nice big and cozy bed, warm hot field, free internet, tiny man.
Shut up. Shut up.
Alright, anyway. So that's, so she says she really liked this one. I think it's very good.
Wow. This is, I need to do some research. I need to watch the original, watch the parodies.
Yeah, I mean, the I guess it, because I've only seen a few seconds of that Fox Say video, I guess I get it even less. That, but I mean, obviously there's some angle in there about Christmas, but you know, I think I should dig up there's a great speech about Christmas in a movie, and let's see, sorry, but I have to dig for it. So do we have another clip to play? Let's go in the bin here. All right, so people making a movie where they're drunk. Drop in the middle of it and see what.
Into the wrong part of the galaxy, Captain. Phase the brain.
I should have killed you back on Trakkion 47.
Ooh, but you couldn't. Oh, killed me back on Trakkion 47. You know why?
Why?
Because a space surgeon of a mother never taught you to be a real space pilot.
I have more medals than you.
And the Battle of Zoryax proves otherwise, space hole. Ensign.
Yes, sir.
Turn out the windshield.
I'm gonna blow you out of the stars! Today is the day that you die!
There's no day in space.
Any of you are looking for any last-minute gift ideas for me? I have one.
Yes.
I'd like Frank Shirley, my boss, right here tonight. I want him brought from his happy holiday slumber over there in Melody Lane with all the other rich people, and I want him brought right here.
Go on.
With a big ribbon on his head. And I want to look him straight in the eye, and I want to tell him what a cheap, lying, no-good, rotten, fart-flushing, low-life, snake-licking, dirt-eating, inbred, overstuffed, ignorant, blood... sucking, dog-kissing, brainless, dickless, hopeless, heartless, fat-ass, bug-eyed, stiff-legged, spotty-lipped, worm-headed sack of monkey shit he is!
Well, hallelujah! What's going on with you?
Where's the Tylenol?
This does not go for your liver. But, a classic Christmas speech. Mixed in right there with an attempt to make a drunk movie.
Yeah, and the idea behind that is, you know, a lot of authors write when they're drunk. So a group of writers got together and wrote the script, and they were drunk.
Yeah, it's called Star Drunk, I guess.
They committed to producing it, whatever they had written in that session. And then they also apparently got their actors to get drunk and... be drunk in the movie as well. So you'll hear a couple like slurred lines and, you know, people kind of smiling and kind of dropping out in and out of character. But it's okay. It's a cool idea. I guess they've got some other, short films and, some other things. So it's worth a check out.
Well, you know, here's something that, we can check out. It's a video you uncovered. This is Mara Wilson. She was an actor in Mrs. Doubtfire and other stuff.
Matilda, she's a little girl.
Oh, she was okay. A little girl. And she's now she's a young woman, right?
And she's living in New York, and she's a writer, and she works for a nonprofit. And
I think that gets the short bell.
I only got so far into her YouTube video where she starts hating on LA, like everybody knows. They're just jealous.
Oh, well, yeah, that's, I don't know, like, as someone who likes LA, I don't get on the side of that. Let's listen to her, what she was saying.
Sorry, my voice is a little shot. I have a sinus infection, not contagious, don't worry. And, I've been going through Kleenex like a teenage boy who just discovered that he can search the word porn on the internet.
You said it yourself.
So, all right, so this is more of an essay than comedy, but here we go. When I was a young child, I did some film acting, and like all child actors, I don't think I really believed that I would live past the age of puberty. At least I had no goals or plans for what I would do, but
no problem.
I knew I wanted desperately to perform on stage. I loved musical theater. It was my passion. I wanted to be Julie Andrews and have her voice. I wanted to have, like, fighting dance sequences in the streets, like the Jets and the Sharks. There's a Far Side cartoon where some circus kids run away to join corporate America. I wanted to... Yeah, I know, hilarious. I wanted to run away. I wanted to run away from Hollywood and join community theater. Unfortunately, I lived in Los Angeles, and a cup of yogurt has more culture than Los Angeles.
Holy
shit. There weren't many opportunities for me to perform on stage.
Take it back!
But then my life changed forever when I discovered show choir. See, John Burroughs High School Vocal Music Association was Glee 10 years before Glee. It really was. I mean, we had the glitter, we had the sequins, we had the big hair, we had the Journey covers, all of that. And I'm not going to go into the description of it because I think Glee has so saturated our culture that most people know what show choir entails at this point, even if they really don't want to.
Negative.
Most people come to LA looking for fame, and the kids who showed up for show choir were no different. They were attractive, they were popular, the homecoming queen was always the girl from the top choir, and they would actually sell buttons of, like, the hot guys in choir to these giggling freshman girls for a large profit. It wasn't a hobby.
No, I did not.
It wasn't. It was like they were majoring in choir.
Yeah, so it's just kind of... And I mean, we're not even 2.5 minutes into it, and I've lost interest with that one.
Exactly. And, you know, good luck with your writing, Mara, but I kind of feel like I've heard this before.
Oh, yeah, it's like kind of a tired act.
Life is so crazy. I'm a young 20-something living in New York.
Yes.
Oh, my God, I got to write about my life. There's this guy on the subway. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
All this crazy shit happens. Oh, my God, my life is so unique and different. And the small mundane things are really funny and weird, right?
Yeah,
right?
We can find humor in the little things or whatever. And
it's just
we can
written reality always... TV. Do you know what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely. We can always find humor in the political porn.
She's crazy, this girl. I really think she is.
Yeah, I want to. Hey, thanks for watching the Political Port. So the other day I went to my friend's house to babysit her son. And when I got there, there was a program on the TV called The Doctors. And they were talking about this new fad.
I like how she gets pissed off about what she's going to talk about before she even talks
eyeballs.
About it.
Not balls. Eyeballs. So they have this chick, you know, who's got this eyeball fetish and eyeball licking fetish, I should say. And she calls into the show and she's like, oh my God, I love licking eyeballs. It's like such a turn on. It's like so awesome. I love it. They're like, how
did you expect me to believe you?
Infection in your eye and didn't you go blind? Yeah, I got like tuberculosis in my eyeball. But I'm not going to stop. I still love licking eyeballs. It's so fucking awesome.
Yes.
I'm thinking, you know, folks, if this isn't a sign to you that society has completely failed and is in a complete decline, I don't know what it is. I don't know what to tell you.
What do you want?
I mean, as if abortion wasn't a sign to you that our society has become completely sociopathic.
No deal.
You have people licking eyeballs as a fetish.
Go on.
That should tell you, folks, we are in complete decline. The complete dumbing down of society is upon us.
Well, I'm going to get a little high.
I wonder what Freud would say about why people are licking eyeballs. Would it be like, you know, like, I don't know what the reason would be.
Be sure to bring it down so you don't get all wet.
Your mother looked at you with scorn in her eyes, and thus you must lick people's eyeballs to infect them so they go blind, so they cannot look at you with anger and disgust. This is why you lick eyeballs. I mean, I don't know, but man, fucking it. Even, you know, I wonder if, like, Caligula, the most vulgar man out there, you know, I wonder if he would be into this shit. You know, he might, he'd be like, no, I have my fucking limits. Licking eyeballs, no, ain't happening. It's just unbelievable to me.
I can do this all day long.
I hope that the person who licks your eyeball doesn't have an asshole-looking fetish as well, because, wow, that would give, like, new meaning to the term stink eye, you know? I mean, seriously, what the fuck, folks? What the fuck?
Crazy.
Be upset. Please. This planet is fucked. Wow.
Good morning.
This is the Pacific Pelican US /64 podcast, episode number 120. It recorded on December 31st, 2013. Thanks for joining me, Jessica.
Happy New Year almost! /64 podcast, and I have an article that I wanted to ask you about, Jessica. You're someone who is an expert on social media, and I want to know what you think about Facebook being able to capture people's information that they type. When they type into a window in the Facebook website and then decide not to post. Don't hit enter or hit the button to post. Just erase it or close the website. Facebook, through their website, you know, code, can, through, you know, like, they're going to have a JavaScript interaction with the server before the user hits post. They're not going to wait for the data to be posted, right?
To read it. And that's just part of how modern web technologies work on a lot of sites.
Right.
They want to enhance interactivity or offer features like spell checking, all sorts of stuff, autocomplete. But Facebook apparently records whether people don't follow through and post something that they typed. According to them, at least right now, this could always change, they don't record the data that someone typed in. But, I mean, you know, the implication being that probably, possibly, at some point, they will. And they have a term called self-censorship. They have these people that have, you know, that work for them, do this, you know, paper about the idea that people write and then don't post it and what is their motivation. But that's Facebook's angle on it. I think the user's angle is, well, so now, you know, that not only do they know what people post, but they know what people are typing and then not posting.
Right. So I think you have to come down to, like, social media 101 on this, which a lot of people, you know, it's like your senior year, you kind of forget, you know, what you've done your freshman year. But it's really like you're on a social network. Everything you're doing and clicking and liking and viewing and watching is being recorded. Everything that you're typing, you know, is being recorded. Like, you, it's become such a part of our lives. It's become so integrated into what we do that we don't think about these kind of things anymore. And we really still have to be aware that when you are on a social media site, things you post and even not post, you know, to your point about, you know, the modern day code, are going to be recorded. You know, like, they are using every single bit of information that you get them to get something out of you, to drive an engagement, to drive, you know, an ad click, to drive a sign up, to, you know, to drive whatever they want to drive. So, of course, they're going to take stuff that you don't publish. And you think that it's, like, your personal information or it's private or whatever. This is not your own blog. You know, you are on somebody else's site. You are in somebody else's house.
When they're on Facebook.com.
Exactly.
They're on Facebook's web site.
Right. So you are in their house, and maybe this is something, you know, think of it like a party, and you say, like, a girlfriend, like, oh my God, can you believe what she's wearing? Da-da. You don't really want everybody to hear that, but you're kind of whispering it, and you say, you know what, never mind, don't say anything. It's the same thing. It's like, it all happened in that house. And if there's recordings going on in that house, you know, people are going to know. Somebody's going to overhear it, you know? And the fact that Facebook wants to understand why people don't post certain things from a sociological sort of inquiry into the human, you know, side of things. I mean, yes, I'm sure they've got tons of information about what we post and don't post and why. And, you know, a lot of times you start to write something and you're like, nobody really cares about that, you know? Like, I think probably what they're going to find in their research is that Facebook is about showboating. You know, nobody puts on, like, it's 10:30 on a Saturday night and I'm sitting by myself eating leftover Chinese in my sweatpants. Right? They're like, I'm in Vegas! Woo! I'm out drinking! Woo! I'm with these hot people! Woo! I met this celebrity! Woo! You know, like, it's the best of your life. You know, it's not your real life. So sometimes, I mean, I would say overall, some people.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. And I've heard it. I think Jeff Jarvis said it's like everyone posts to a social network like they're a celebrity.
Exactly. Exactly. And,
or you know, it's their life as if they're a celebrity. Yeah.
It comes back down to, like, rule number one, like, own your content, right? So put your stuff on your own servers, on your own blog, push it to other places, but have a record of it, you know, and know that when you're on anybody else's site, just like you're in anybody else's home, you know, you don't really know what's going on. And you think it's your home and you're comfortable and you start talking about things, but it's really not. And they're watching you and they're recording you and they're using you. I mean, they're all eventually going to be businesses, right? I mean, Facebook wants to make money. Twitter wants to make money.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're listed companies at this point, both of them. So they have an obligation, a fiduciary duty to make a profit and increase those profits for their shareholders.
Yeah. And basically, they just want to sell you a bunch of shit.
Well, they want to sell they want to sell something that'll be customers will exchange for money. Exactly. And in this case, their customers are the advertisers, and they're kind of selling their users, right? They're selling, like, the access to their users.
And see, I think that there is a really there's a lot of, like, great potential there. Like, you know, the younger generations are a lot more open to giving out their private information in exchange for relevant information. Like, yes, I will let you know where I am with my iPhone on the map if you will tell me, based on my location, where the nearest Starbucks is because I really want a coffee right now. Or, you know, that kind of stuff, right? Yes, I'm willing to give you my location in exchange for information that I want. Instead of, you know, having to like drive around or look for a Starbucks or I don't have the app or whatever. Which you have to get the app, by the way. You know, they're willing to do that. But all these privacy concerns and all these snarls, it's like, whoa, wait, they're using me to like sell me stuff. And, you know, it's like, yes, they are. Instead of letting it be user-centric, they're letting it be advertising-centric. And that is the downfall of social media. I mean, it's the truth, you know? Like, advertisers do a pretty shitty job.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because it's really hard to understand your customer. It's really hard to, like, get into the inside and understand them.
So they waste a lot of people's time. Even mass advertising, of course, it's only going to work for a certain percentage of the audience, right? Only a certain percentage of the audience is going to want to buy that shampoo or that car. But even targeted advertising so often misses.
Right.
Amazon claims to have an amazing algorithm for data about people, that what people have bought, right? And I mean, when you go to Amazon, it really is obvious stuff out there. Like stuff you just searched for, stuff in the exact same category you just searched for.
It's horrible.
Or something you've bought already, or maybe something like that you own because it's you bought something by an author, and maybe you already own the other book by them from a different source. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, it's just so annoying.
Yeah. And I kept getting this really annoying ad on Facebook. Like, it was for underwear. And I was like, God, I keep seeing this damn ad. And finally, I saw the very faint gray little drop-down triangle. And I was like, I'm going to get rid of this ad. So I clicked on it, and I was like, get rid of this ad. And then it was like, is this ad not relevant to you?
Yeah.
And
asked me, like, that's the thing. You almost don't want to even give them that data because
no.
Then they're already looking. They already have data because you clicked on it in a way. Like, it's just, they're always looking for more data. So like you said, they put the little triangle there.
Two rounds of questions. So I figured, great. It's not relevant to me. I don't want this. I just don't want to see it. And they're like, well, what? Why wasn't it relevant? Have you seen this before? Blah, 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 blah. And I just thought, my goodness. Now, here's the thing. You know, if this stops Facebook from showing me ads, great. But here's the thing. Why are they wasting their energy on me saying no to things that make them money instead of trying to engage me with things that do provide them with more information?
Yeah, just who knows? Who knows what their real goals are? Their goals are so amorphous. Like, you know, they have an obligation to make profit because they're a public company, but you remember when they listed on the stock market, they talked about how they have this mission and stuff. Remember, like the language of their IPO roadshow was very very unconventional. Put it that way.
Yes, it was. So yeah, just remember when you log on to a social media site, you are being tracked and watched, and everything you say and don't say is being recorded and used against you, for you, hopefully, but usually against you.
Yeah, it's something that you gotta, watch out for. Just like neighbors like this that are like this guy.
Why does there in one Corpus Christi neighborhood? Why? It's a bloody Santa Claus hanging on a cross with a thorn crown. While some don't mind it, others find it inappropriate. Heather Jackson went to the home to talk with the man who made it. Heather.
Well, Jessica, when I showed up, I noticed that the home was also located near a church.
Howdy, stranger.
Still knowing that, the homeowner was still surprised to hear that people are offended by his bloody Santa Claus that looks like he's stretched out on a Jesus cross. At first glance, this may look like a Halloween decoration.
But yeah.
A closer look.
It's December. It's Christmas time. It's just a Christmas ornament. That's about it.
Aaron Olivares created this unusual Christmas decoration. It's hanging outside his garage here on Horn and Nicholas. It's a stuffed Santa suit made to look like the jolly old Saint Nick. But then there's blood, a crown of thorns, and the decoration is stretched out on a wooden cross.
Crown of barbed wire, a little more decoration. That's about it.
You never thought about the Jesus reference?
Nah, I didn't really. It wasn't coming to me like that.
That's bullshit.
Olivares even gave it a name.
Just needed some lettering up there, so I put the Slayer up there. It's not nothing satanic. It's just decorations for Christmas.
He said, what was that?
And doesn't think it is disrespectful.
I'm Christian. I mean, there is a God and there is a devil.
Some are offended.
The United States is based on guns.
The big thing, the cross. Santa Claus, you know, well, you know, you can put Santa Claus on a hood, put Santa Claus on a roof, put Santa Claus in the front yard, but why put him on a cross?
Others don't mind. Blanca Peralta lives right across the street.
It doesn't really bother me, you know. And everyone likes it. It brings me home, my friends, everyone, we all joke about it.
Either way, Aaron says the zombie Santa named Slayer is here to stay and has a warning for those who don't like it.
Get out of my yard. You don't like it, don't drive by here. Don't come down Horny Lane, don't come.
Olivares also says that for the most part, children aren't afraid of this scary
Why do people always say that? Like, if you oppose something, they're like, don't look at it, don't listen to it, don't come by here.
It's like a territorial kind of response.
Oh, come on, this is bullshit.
It's just like, I don't know. It's like, oh, you can't critique anything. That's going to be my response.
Well, I'm going to get a little high.
It's like, oh, if you don't like men raping women, then just don't read anything about it. Or don't, you know, listen to anything about it. It's like, just ignore it.
That, yeah, that doesn't make, that, yeah, I know that people that say stuff like that don't make any sense, for sure. Something that's probably also pretty nonsensical, illogical is the NSA spying on World of Warcraft. You hear about that?
Fuck the NSA.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they're going beyond what they're supposed to be doing. They're
Snooping Agency.
Yeah, they're supposed to be trying to find people that are actually a threat, I mean, supposedly, and all they're doing is casting these massive investigations. There's people that are investigating former lovers, you know, there's people that are using it for personal reasons. Obviously, there's that massive leak with Snowden, but that just shows you, you know, like, a lot of people have this access to it, and they can tap right into all sorts of different systems, and it's being used, they're misusing the system of like warrants. They're misusing the system of courts. They have secret hearings with no opposition. You know, the whole, English and American legal systems are based on adversarial hearings, right? And yet all these wiretaps are approved in secret courts.
Yeah. And now, I know, like, the government and video games have been linked for a long time. So I wonder if they're looking for World of Warcraft players.
Oh, you mean like the military supporting first person shooters?
Yeah.
Yeah, did actually have like an official training game for the original Xbox, right? And they've also, it's very possible, maybe likely, that they've supported games like Call of Duty, where they have, you know, military equipment in them, and they certainly, like, they support big Hollywood movies, right? Mm-hmm. And that helps tilt the message of those things. It just seems kind of farcical that they would be spying on a game like World of Warcraft, because this is like a massive online role-playing game, right? Like, it's not the type of game that you would expect your militants to be using. You know what I'm saying? Like, are people going to go through the convoluted process of getting subscriptions to, who's it, Blizzard or whatever, to get, you know, to get their World of Warcraft capable computer? You have to have a computer that can handle the, you know, the game and is compatible. Like, are people, you know what I mean, are shady people, are terrorists, are they really incentivized to be using this game as a place to plot?
You know, I don't know too much about World of Warcraft or what you can do in there, but Yeah, why would they spy on that game?
Well, you've heard of the Anarchist Cookbook, right?
Oh, yeah. One of the first things I learned how to do was to put a notch in a dollar bill in a certain spot so that when you put it into a change machine, it would give you the change for, like, the dollar, but it would also spit back out your dollar.
Well, those were simpler times, I guess, when the machines were much more vulnerable to that type of... cracking.
Yeah.
And I remember that, you know, it was the type of thing that, yeah, people would pass around on the bulletin board systems at the time.
Yes, BBS.
Right? And it was sort of, like you said, there was like small time petty stuff like how to manipulate dollar bills and other types of things. But also there were these supposed bomb recipes and all this stuff, right? Like, and it's so hilarious that one person thought that they really knew how to make all that stuff. Like, I don't know if there's ever been like a very much empirical testing of it, but I mean, a lot of it's got to be bullshit. Like, a lot of it's got to be pretty wrong or like dangerous, or you know what I mean? Like, it's like, well, I claim to have all these recipes. Okay, I mean, I bet a lot of it's bullshit, and I remember having a superficial interest, but never really, like, I had, like, some text file, like, you know, Riley, when you...
Sure.
When you remember, and I never really read much of it. I kind of flipped around on it, and people would talk about it, but then, so I don't know, I can't say too much about it, but now the author is disclaiming it, and writing, there's an article in The Guardian. The guy who wrote it in 1969 is now, you know, recanting it. I think the guy's name is William Powell. Yeah, I mean,
so lame.
He has to go and, like, he has to write it, and now he has to go and talk about how he doesn't want it published.
I want
to
unwrite something that I wrote in 1969 because now it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I mean, maybe he could stage a burning of all the copies of it that he can gather, you know, and they can, you know, do something, yeah, like that, and
you know, people should just be like, it was what I wrote at the time. I don't maybe necessarily agree with it now, but to like want to like take it back, like you can't take it back. It's already out there. Thousands of people have made bombs and, you know,
probably poorly proportioned and mostly ineffective
robbed vending
bombs.
Machines and what was the other, I'm trying to think of some of the other ones,
you know,
by the way, that dollar thing never really worked for me.
Yeah, I mean, it may be in the late 60s early 70s and stuff was even cruder than when we were kids in the 80s and 90s, you know, but I'm not really sure. You know, but yeah, I mean, it seems like there's still places to get it, but it's not available via Kindle now.
That's like full circle stupidness. Isn't it though? I mean, you're reading the Anarchist Cookbook on a Kindle device. Amazon knows everything about you. You might also like bomb making for dummies. I mean, come on. Jump the shark. Literally.
It doesn't matter about mixing them up together. I use a lot of fluorite. Fluorite is used for accessing higher mental planes of consciousness. And I guess fluorite's my favorite crystal. I'd just say go for the crystal that you're attracted to. Definitely not an intellectual decision.
Don't have any idea at all no. about the type you want or anything. Just allow yourself to go in. And there'll be one that you'll just feel a really strong pull.
Because
no problemo.
There's been an exchange of energy between you and the crystal. And that exchange of energy is manifested in you in a desire to touch it or want to hold it.
Are you out of your mind?
Don't touch my crystal, but I think crystals are to be shared, and especially with children, because they've got all that wonderful, innocent, joyous energy.
You do have to be very aware of clearing crystals at all times, simply because of this. But that's not the poor old crystal's fault if it absorbs negative energy from somebody who's been handling it.
Of course, if you're in a situation where someone's going through a lot of negativity or anger, you would cleanse the crystal.
The power of thought is extremely effective in clearing crystals. But of course, you can place them on amethyst clusters and or into a properly aligned pyramid. Or if you wish to have the joy of taking them through the elements into the earth and water and moonlight, not too much sunlight. Moonlight is better than sunlight.
I just hold it at my heart and I just allow light.
There's an article that alerted me to about the benefits of paternity leave and how, you know, the U.S. is behind a lot of European countries in paternity leave, especially for fathers, but also for mothers, and, the amount of time, the amount of benefit, the amount of time they're allowed to spend with the kid and stuff like that.
I just really think that America could do a much better job at maternity and paternity leave. But especially paternity leave. I mean, there's an article that talked about, I think they looked at Japan and Norway and Sweden. And they did these, about 700 people, a small survey sampling. But they found that, men's wages, like women's wages, will suffer. So if they take paternity leave, they won't make as much in the long run, both men and women. But men will have a closer relationship with their kids, and women will be better off as well if, men take paternity leave and help out. And I guess I feel like, we're in these such traditional roles where women stay at home with the kids and men go to work. And really, what is that doing for our families? I mean, why don't we support the idea that, men stay home and help and be a part and connect with their kids at a young age, and develop that relationship? And a lot of times men feel like they have to go out and work even more when they have kids to support the family. But, I think oftentimes what we hear is that kids just want to be with their dad, want to be with their families, and creating a community, creating a country that supports that. And I don't know how Norway does it or Sweden does it in terms of, I think I've read somewhere like they get like a year off, paid or probably partially paid. But so many people I know of, they're like, it's stressful when they have kids because they're like, oh, and I only get, 60% pay, and you got to save up all your vacation. And, then if your kids are sick or whatever, especially if you have multiple kids, right? And then, you have like a baby or whatever, that's all your sick time as a working adult. Like, forget if you're sick. It's like, oh, my kids are sick. Okay, somebody's got to stay home, either the mom or the dad. Who's it going to be? Most often it's the mom, And I just think it's an interesting idea that there are other countries out there. The one thing that it didn't really focus on, the article didn't really focus on was the kids, impression. So this was talking to a bunch of dads, but how do the kids feel? Like, do the kids feel more connected with their dads, with their families? That would be interesting. I mean, yes, it's great that the dads feel connected, but I think the idea of paternity leave is for the betterment of the children. I mean, the fathers too, right? They get that opportunity, but it'd be interesting to hear the children's perspective.
Right, yeah.
What do you think?
No, I agree with you.
Yeah.
Make good points, and it would be good to hear more about what the kids think too.
I just think we need to, move. Well, the other thing, too, is, most of America is structured on this, 9-to-5, so to speak, right? It's probably more like 8-to-8. But this very, structured, this is when we work, this is when we don't work. And we just need to be open to a more fluid way of working that is more accommodating to rearing children. You know, like, it's a really, really important job. It's the number, I think, the number one job in this world. And we don't pay respect to that. And then we kind of almost punish women who take off some time to raise their kids. And, you know, it just doesn't seem right. You know, motherhood and parenting in general just seems like it doesn't have the respect that I think it deserves. And it's a really important thing. You know, you're shaping the lives of future generations. And to not support that as a general economy, as a, you know, you're going to make better workers if they're relaxed and hanging out with their kids, and you're going to make future generations that are more in touch with their families and connected and feel loved. And, you know, I mean, that's kind of what we all need, is just to feel loved and feel a part of something. And I don't know.
Oh,
I guess
yeah.
It's just surprising to me that, we're still so 1950s oriented, you know, and that's what the article said. And it's really true. It's women stay home, men go to work. And it's 2013, you know, like, we haven't really evolved that much in the workplace. We haven't really evolved much at all. I mean, Robin Roberts said, you know, she had a really tough year, right? She fought a disease publicly on ABC, and she thanked her partner and her family and friends and a bunch of other people.
Right.
And it was news. Robin Roberts is gay. It's news. And it's like, oh, we're still there. We're still in the shock and awe of so-and-so's gay and so-and-so's gay and so-and-so's gay. And
it's a joke.
You know, it'll be nice to get to a point where so-and-so being gay is not news.
Yeah, I know, right?
You know, I mean, it's just, it is what it is. And, you know, people just need to get over it. The more we talk about it, the more we focus on somebody's sexuality, the more it becomes an us versus them. Versus just, you know, nobody's like, oh my God, so-and-so dyed her hair, or so-and-so's wearing a blue suit. Or, no, we need to care about more important things. And, you know, good for Robin Roberts that she's thanking her partner of, you know, many years. And, but yeah, does it really need to be a news story? I don't know.
Yeah, I think you're right. Votech with a track called Aviator. Used to be one of the top drum and bass guys in the 90s, and you know, this is a song from I think a few years ago. It's also very good. And there's also plenty of musicians out there that are not very good. And sometimes we like to highlight them as well. Now, this I found via Your Kickstarter Sucks. And, well, I'm going to try to add some beats. But we'll see what we can do for Dope Money Records here.
Hello, my name is Timothy Schmidt. And I'd like $5,000 to start a demo.
Okay.
To get our career off and going. There's a little bit of background about me. I was born and raised in Detroit, Michigan,
Detroit?
About 5 miles away from where Eminem was.
First,
I would like to just get to know you.
I lived off of Glendale and Fielding, over towards Evergreen, Schoolcraft, and Burt Road. I was towards Plymouth and the west side of Detroit.
Could I speak to the drug dealer of the house, please?
I was diagnosed about 6 years ago with paranoid schizophrenia. And I live with that every day. But I need $5,000 to do my demo, and I'm gonna give you a little taste of what I can do and what I'm gonna put on this demo. Here we go. Alright. Deep in the blue, dots with those packed locks. Everybody trying to come up slaying crack rocks. Look, man makes money, now money makes man. Living life in the fast lane, short lifespan. Now I got to get some dope. Living the life of crime is the only life I know. Me and my brother J.A.Y., we do or die. Murder you all with no other vibes. A dollar, a million dollar. Cash flow getting low, streets dried up, everything moves slow. In this game, so the dirty shame, you know my name. I'm with the rest of the hustlers, forget the fam, getting mad.
What?
Mail. I'm getting mail.
You idiot!
I'm getting mail. They call me UPS, Federal Express, Untouchable Alieness.
You idiot!
World E, murder cooked up a key. Don't get hot off your own supply. Went from drugs to having clean.
So shut up!
Beans, got some eyes of some dope fiends. Amphetamines, got my hood on lockdown. Jealous ass boys won't allow me to put the clock down. I had to sacrifice my family and friends just to clock these in. Blowing in the bins. It's kinda lonely at the top, but it don't stop. Time to do the flip flop with the crack rock. That's a little sample.
Yes.
I'm gonna put that on the demo. So,
you!
And if you pledge me, I'll probably give you a signed CD.
Did you expect me to believe you?
Be the first rocker, boy. You know what I'm saying?
Probably, but not guaranteed.
Thank you.
Stop it!
That's Cleveland area singer Megan Zirke. Now, I actually talked about her Kickstarter on a previous podcast. And while I didn't think the video that was attached to the Kickstarter page was very good, and just the way it was produced and stuff, the music showed some promise. I was a small backer of the album that she wanted to record. She got it funded, and then so the CD just came. So I was just playing a clip off of it right there. Well, that is Seattle area artist Allison Chains. Lades Daly died in 2002, their lead singer. One of those bands among a number of Seattle bands that lost a key member to addiction, heroin, I guess. In the case of Andrew Wood of Mother Love Bone. And also Lance Daly of Alice in Chains.
Yeah.
They were a great band. So, I was playing a Seattle band because we were in Seattle over Christmas. And what did you think of some of the neighborhoods that we were checking out there? What did you think of Georgetown?
I thought it was a cool place, had a cool vibe. Seemed like a lot of like bars and restaurants, and nothing really opened until noon. So there wasn't much open when we were around there before noon. But it seemed like a cool place. I mean, definitely something to go back to and check out when it's open.
What did you think of the Burien kind of area or town or whatever that is down there?
The Burien was cool. There was some cool little coffee shops and had a kind of good beatnik-y, you know, organic kind of vibe to it.
What did you think of Green Lake up north?
Liked Green Lake a lot. Liked the big lake and the access to kind of walking and running around that. Cool neighborhood because it's close to a lot of other neighborhoods on the north side and pretty easy access to downtown.
What do you think of Capitol Hill out to the Central District?
Like Capitol Hill a lot. I mean, that's really a great neighborhood because it's so walkable and there's, you know, so many things going on, and then you're just a hop, skip, and a jump away from downtown. So that's really nice.
Yeah. Well, that's cool, and we saw those in a number of other neighborhoods, but, you know, it's cool to see a good bit of the city with you. And that will conclude. We'll go to a different Seattle area artist here. I guess I'm thinking Nirvana for this one as we go out. And this has been podcast number 120 with me, Dan McKeown, and with Jessica. Thank you, and it's been very nice having you, and we will see you again on the next show. If you want to see the show notes, check out pacificpelican.us/64, and just look for podcast 120, and you'll find some links. You'll be able to download the MP3 and you know, that kind of thing. All right, and if you want to check out Jessica's Twitter account, check out Jessica McKeown, all one word. And if you want to check out my novel, go to dgmcloud.com/novel.